With that, I'd like to introduce our speaker. Please help me welcome Courtney M., who came through the floodwaters all the way from Newark, Delaware.
Thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Courtney. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Courtney.
Thank you guys for inviting me to come out to your group on this Monday night. Pleasure to be here with you. And so my job here tonight is just to talk to you about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And if I forget to say it or somehow you don't get it, the message I hope to bring is hope. That, you know, regardless of where you've been or what you think or what makes you different, you know, because those were all my ideas, like, you know, all these things that make me different from other people, like, it's not enough if I'm willing to do the action, but I have to be willing to do the action. So, I have a sobriety date. It's March 1st, 2010. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor, and I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring other women through the 12 steps as it's outlined in the big book. And, it's so funny, I was talking to my neighbor before I got here, and my dog's been, like, really acting up. So my sister, a little while ago, I'm the oldest of five, and my second, you know, my sister, she's 25, her and I live together, and about a year ago, she said she wants to get a dog. And I thought, great, get a dog. Well, that actually means, in case nobody's ever lived with someone, hey, can you help me take care of a dog, you know, and walk the dog and feed the dog and clean up it when the dog poops all over the walls because you gave him beef stew, which the dog did love the beef stew. So that's a good thing, but apparently it's not good. Anyway, long story short, she has recently been tearing up the carpet. And so my neighbor gave me these little balls to give to her, which was really kind. But he said, oh, what are you getting ready to get into? I said, I'm going to a meeting. He said, well, don't just be nervous. Just take a shot before you go. You'll be fine. I said, yeah, you might want to come with me. No, I didn't say that, but I just said, no, I probably won't, but good idea. And, you know, but that was what, to me, a shot would make anything better. You know, I picked up a drink when I was 14 years old. And I had been drinking regularly, like, oh, on the weekends, like, I'd grab a handle of pop-off vodka with my friends, and my parents were really restrictive of who I was able to hang out with, so they always wanted to talk to somebody's parent, which what I thought was ridiculous. And so, but my friend's mom would talk to my mom, and so I could go over there, and as soon as she went to sleep, we would, you know, be drinking the handle of pop-off vodka. And then around the time I was 14, I had a birthday party. And I was going into eighth grade, and at this time, like, nobody really knew who I was, really. I was kind of just like a nobody in school. And so I had this birthday party, and my friends, we got this, well, my cousin's grandfather had a liquor cabinet. And so I remember we poured, like, white liquor, brown liquor, all different kinds of liquor, like, in a water bottle. And so she smuggled that in. And then my other friend smuggled this, like, raspberry vodka, like, cheap, I don't even know what it was, smuggled that in. And then we were having a wonderful time. It was when 50 Cent came out with that album, You Can Find Me in the Club. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but it was, like, it was just, I had arrived, you know, how they talk about it in the big book, like, I had arrived, you know, I felt like, you know, all these people are here celebrating my birthday, it has nothing to do with the free food and the drinks, you know what I mean, it's all about me, clearly, because these people are like my ride or die friends. I mean, we just met, and they're here, so they have to be, and it's just so funny. But anyway, long story short, I walk upstairs, and my dad is also having a similar party upstairs. It was a football party. So I don't know if it was a Super Bowl or what kind of party it was. But anyway, my mom asked me if I was okay, and I remember that I put my hand, like, up on what I thought was the refrigerator, but it wasn't there anymore, and I just, like, completely fell out. And then they called everybody, like, into the front yard, and who brought the liquor here? You know, it could have been anybody else, but it wasn't me who brought the liquor into the home, of course. Had to be somebody else. And then shortly after that, though, my mom started to catch on, and she told my dad, like, I don't think it's her friends. Like, I think Courtney's the problem. And I was the problem. Yeah. And I didn't even know it, you know. So that happens. I'm 14. And then next thing I know, I go to school. So all my friends get kicked out. I don't think my parents called the cops, but everybody got kicked out. My dad held my hair up for me while I threw up, like, most of the night. And then I was punished for like a month or some absurd amount of time. And I went back to school and like all of a sudden everybody knew who I was, you know, and I liked the effect that drinking had on me. You know, I liked that feeling. I liked feeling like I don't care what people think about me. You know, I don't care. It felt like it silenced something inside of me that had been so loud for so long. And I didn't even know because, like, as a kid, I can remember the creepiest things. Like, in my mind, like, my mom and dad, like, they're pretty normal people. You know, they're married. They're okay. My dad drinks, but he has, like, a job. I mean, it's not my job to call him alcoholic or not, but, you know, they loved me as much as they could. And if love could have gotten me sober sooner or kept me sober or had anything to do with why I was an alcoholic, it'd probably be a different speaker up here tonight, you know, because they loved me. But it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't enough when it came to alcohol. But so I'm in eighth grade, and I had already started drinking at this time. And then we go camping. So it's like eighth grade summer going to ninth grade, and we go camping. And I'm drinking pretty regularly, pretty consistently. And I'm at a party, like, down this cabin or something, and my cousin, like, came looking for me. And he, like, picks me up, carries me back, because that's, like, my MO pretty much. Like, if you're coming to get me, you got to be prepared to, like, carry me, because most likely I probably can't walk and I may have peed myself. This time I didn't, but, you know, later on down the line. Anyway, so I go back, and my dad's, like, sitting all alone by himself, which is weird, because when we go camping, my dad's side of the family goes, and everybody drinks, and everybody sits around the campfire, and everyone's together, and the younger kids take care of the older kids, and everybody else just stays around the campfire. So my dad being by himself was, like, kind of weird, so I was thinking, what the hell happened here? Well, it turns out my brother had been flown to at the time, it was this hospital in Virginia, and this other hospital after that, and he actually had a brain tumor. So he was 2 at that time, and I was, like, 15 going on 16. And I just remember, like, praying my first solid prayer to God. Like, God, if you would just, like, make my brother okay, then, you know, I'll be, like, a good person. You know, I'll do whatever you want me to do, whatever. And the next 3 months, you know, my brother went through, I think, 3 brain surgeries and all that kind of stuff. None of that stuff makes me alcoholic, but what it did do was make my parents leave me alone so I could drink the way I wanted to drink, you know. And I started, like, going places, staying out later, doing things that before I wasn't really able to do because of, like, the restrictions that I had. So I'm 16. I'm betting people that I can drive their car better than them. Honda, Civic, no insurance, on the road, in the neighborhood, driving as fast as I can. And, which is probably like 10 miles an hour because I'm scared as hell that I'm going to, like, crash this person's car if I crash their car, what are they going to think of me? They're going to think I'm not cool, or they're going to think I'm really cool. If I crash it, should I crash it? Should I not crash it? That's just how my brain works. Like, it's like too much all the time. So I crashed the car and, at the time, I was such, like, a little thug. My friend's like, throw your hoodie, put it in the drain. And I'm like, yeah, of course, that's a great idea. Throw the hoodie, you know, we're running from the cops. And, I don't even think the cops were, like, coming to us. Like, it was in the neighborhood. You know, the cops probably had, like, nothing to do with us. They were just, like, en route. And I thought I was like, oh, I'm running from the police. Here I go. And, anyway, my brother was actually in a brain surgery that night, and my best friend had went to the hospital with my family, which I just couldn't do. I couldn't bring myself to go there because I just had such a hard time showing up to life. And so my dad, I call him, and my dad told me, you know, to lock the door and to start crying. And I did. I locked the door and I started crying. And as soon as the police came in, my dad told him, you know, what was going on with my brother. And I was crying, you know, and I lost my license until I was like 18. So from there, you know, so now I'm drinking pretty regularly. I'm 17. I have been dating this guy for a little while, and we have been together probably about 2 years. So like 16 to 18, I was with him, and, He was everything to me, you know. Him and I, we had, like, so much fun. Every party we went to, he got in fights. And he was not a good fighter. So every time, like, I would be, like, lost, like, looking for him, and he would be, like, in a fight, like, getting jumped, like, somewhere over here, and I would be, like, crazy. But it was, like, it was cool at the time. It was fun because I wasn't concerned with myself. I could drink the way I wanted to drink. You know, I was more worried about him. The pressure wasn't on me to change or different, be different or do anything. I was just like, you know, leaving school, hanging out with him, all this other stuff. And then one day, like, I took him, well, me, I didn't take him because I didn't have a car, but me and this girl who he, like, lived with, took him to the courthouse because he was, like, going to turn himself in because he didn't have, he violated probation or something. So he actually wound up getting arrested for 6 months, you know, in prison. And I remember that time, it was like I just felt like so much loss. And I remember being in my bedroom, like, with a CD player and, like, headphones on, just, like, rocking back and forth and, like, crying because he was my solution at first, you know. Like, it was drinking, it was partying, it was him, it was being with him. And then when he was gone, it was like, now I'm left with myself, and, like, I don't even know who to be, you know, because I've been everything you wanted me to be, you know, and I've been who I thought I wanted to be, you know, who you wanted me to be, and now I don't even know who I am at all. And so I just, you know, started drinking more and more the way that I like to drink, and then I met his cousin, and, you know, I started dating him for a little while, and by the time I was 19, I was drinking on a regular basis every day, and I was unable to, you know, wake up and not drink. So from there, you know, I dropped out of school when I was 17, and I wound up getting my GED. Well, my mom would tell you that she actually took me out of school because they weren't concerned about my education. Because my mom was convinced that, you know, the school system really was not giving me a fair advantage with everything that happened. And just because in the middle of that, like, there's a lot of things that happen that, you know, my mom thought that different things could have happened when you were in school. And this was my second high school. So I wound up going to night school. And while I was in night school, I was dating my friend's brother. And he was a really good guy. And this is another one of those moments in life where it's like, if I wouldn't have been drinking the way that I drank, I probably would have made a better decision. But see, when I pick up a drink, it doesn't matter because I just want to be with what, like, whoever is going to allow me to drink the way that I like to drink, because it's the one thing that provides a sense of ease and comfort for me. You know, I can breathe. I feel like I can finally, like, be myself. I'm not worried. I'm not afraid. You know, the future, I'm not thinking about that. It doesn't matter to me. And not to mention, like, my mind that constantly, like, runs and runs and runs and thinks about, like, everything, that doesn't happen. So, you know, from there, basically, excuse me for a second. So at this time I'm 19. Oh, my brother is fine, by the way. He just had his 18th birthday. I always forget to tell that part, and people are like, what the, like, is your brother okay? Like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's fine. Like, isn't this about me? Come on, no. Selfishness and self-centeredness. But that selfishness, I really didn't even know how deep it was, because, like, I just thought that I liked to drink. You know, I just thought that I liked to have a good time. And then when I was, like, 19, I started getting physically sick. And I thought to myself, like, well, I'll just stop, you know. And I was with someone at the time who seemed like they were a lot worse off than me. So I thought, well, I'm not, you know. I was always surrounding myself with people who I thought were, like, you know, worse than me. So I could say, like, oh, I'm not as bad as them. I'm not. If I was as bad as them, then I would change. And I remember saying things to my mom because I tried to go to meetings for a little while. I remember saying, like, people, they just go out and they come back in all the time. Like, don't worry, I have years to get sober. Like, I don't have to do it now. It's not a big deal. Like, I'll just do it, you know, whenever. And that really seemed logical to me, to just, you know, do it whenever I could do it. Like, it's not until I started really seeing that I was in the grips of it and could not stop. I think when I started to realize that, it started to get really scary. And at the time, my friend who used to pick me up from school, he had got incarcerated for a pretty long time. And I was writing him and I was telling him like everything that's going on. And at the time I was still living in my parents' house, and I always lived in their house. I always had a bed there, but there were certain times I was let in, certain times I wasn't allowed in, and you know, certain times I just couldn't bring myself to even go home. In fact, I remember this one time I spent the night in a holding cell, and I came home and I was like, what? Like, nobody answered the call. I was like, in a holding cell? Like, can you imagine me in a holding cell? Like, and you just didn't answer my call. And my mom was like, you do this to us all the time. Like, you just don't show up. You know, why would I think, you know, anything different from you now? And I was like, wow. And in that moment, I was like, damn, that's pretty selfish, you know, like, that's pretty wrong. But I couldn't, I was still there. I wasn't in a place where I could be like, oh, yeah, you know what, I'm going to turn from this. I'm going to go to, you know, do what I need to do. I had no clue. And so I continued on like that. And I remember my mom wrote me this letter, and she said, you know, I love you, but I have other children to raise, and I just have to separate myself and just prepare myself for your death, because the way that you're going, I just don't even know who you are. And I was mad. Like, I was really mad. Like, how dare you? Like, I'm going to find my way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be just fine. And the truth is I was, like, 90 pounds and, like, so skinny. And I looked like death. You know, I thought I looked good. But when I look at pictures, actually, one of the girls I sponsor, I came across these pictures. And she was like, oh, I want to see them, you know. And I was like, all right. And she was like, that doesn't even look like you. Like, I wouldn't have believed it. And I was like, yeah, that was me, you know. But it's just so crazy, because that's how everybody thinks about each other. You know what I mean? Like, none of us can see because of the 12 steps, because of what it looks like to have a relationship with God, because of what can happen when you're willing to go to any length. You know, like, that is what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you're willing to go to any length, you're not the same person. And in fact, I'm thankful, because if it would have, like, I don't know if I would have made it if I would have got, like, the same person who came into Alcoholics Anonymous would not have survived. Would not have survived. You know, and so I had to change. But going back to being 19, and my mom writes me this letter. My dad reads the letter that I write to my friend Bubba, who, you know, was in prison. And he's like, you know what, I'm going to take you to get help. My mom brought this up to me the other day. Of course, he sent my mom to take me. He didn't take me, but that's fine. And my mom was like, do you remember when you were there? And because I did a commitment a little while ago, she was like, you gave me hell. And I was like, I didn't even remember that, but apparently I gave her hell. So, yeah, I went there, and so it was called a Meadowood Detox. It's like a four to nine day thing in Delaware. And I remember they went around the room and everybody shared their experience, and I just hadn't had any experiences like what they were talking about. And so I thought, you know what, I know I'm probably a drug addict, but I don't think I have this alcoholism thing. And I think I could probably just drink, like, just drink like a certain kind of, like, just, you know, certain things, and I'll probably be okay. That's probably what I need to do. I just need to kind of refocus it here. And so when I left, my girlfriend picked me up and she said, well, you can drink Captain, right? I said, of course I can drink Captain. Like, why wouldn't I be able to drink Captain? Do you have a bottle of water? Because I'm going to, you know, just drink Captain and then a bottle of water and we'll be fine. And that was it. And then I was off to the races again. And a few people who I said I was never going to hang out with again, I wound up hanging out with them again. And before I know it, I'm 21, and everything that they had went around the room and said, like, I had done it, and all the things that I thought I wouldn't do, I had did. And 21, and I really have nothing. You know, I have a GED. I had gotten fired from Seasons Pizza, and I was really shocked that Seasons Pizza had fired me, because I thought I was the best waitress that they ever had, and I had, like, one regular, so I could, like, ride on that. Like, I bring people to this restaurant. They come here just for me, but I had fallen asleep at the counter, and my coworker told my boss that I was falling asleep on the counter, and I was outraged. I was like, wanted to fight her, and they're like, no, you need to leave because you were falling asleep on the counter. And when I got home, I was outraged even then, and I told my dad, can you believe that they would fire me from the Seasons Pizza? He said, yeah. Actually, I walked in. He said, what'd you get fired? I said, what do you mean? Like, is this some conspiracy against me? Like, everybody knows I got fired from the Seasons Pizza, which I thought I was a great waitress at. And from there, you know, I really didn't do much of anything. I just kind of worked random jobs here and there. I worked at the mall. And all I remember, working at the Piercing Pagoda. Do you guys have one of those little jewelry stores in the mall? Yeah. So I remember going there to work one day, and I don't really remember leaving. I just remember, like, putting my lipstick on in one of their mirrors, and that's, like, all I remember from there. So, but I worked random jobs, and I, like, came home when I felt like it, and then all of a sudden, like, things just got really bad really quickly. I stopped, like, brushing my teeth. I stopped, like, with my personal hygiene on a regular basis. Like, I was, like, pretty much scum of the earth. I didn't care about, like, how I looked or who I had to hang out with or whatever. You know, I was just concerned with where I was going to get that next drink. And I honestly thought that I would die like that. You know, I didn't think that there was another way. I just thought that maybe I could scale it back. Maybe I could, you know, work at a diner. Maybe I could get a car. If I could just get a car, you know, maybe I could drive to another state. Like, I love it when people talk about the, you know, places where they go to try and get sober. I would have loved to do that. Like, I couldn't make it off of, like, 273 by our house or Wilmington. Like, I just couldn't leave. I couldn't make it far enough. I was so broke and, like, just ugly pretty much that nobody would take me. But anyway, it's funny. So I'm 21, and I had gotten in some pretty serious trouble, and that doesn't make me alcoholic. Like, what makes me alcoholic is the fact that once I pick up a drink, I can't put it down, and once I pick it back up, like, I can't determine when I'm going to start again. Like, I suffer from the phenomenon of craving. Like, the allergy is definitely in my system, and I know that if I pick up a drink tomorrow, I will probably continue to drink, or I would hide in secrecy, and maybe, I don't know what would happen. I don't want to find out. I don't want to find out, but anyway, so I was already in another program, and my parents had gotten me a lawyer, and they got it, so all I had to do was just pass this one program. And I couldn't stop drinking. You know, I could not stop drinking regardless of what they said they were going to offer me, regardless of what they said they were going to help me with, regardless of what, you know, sentence I didn't have to do. I couldn't stop drinking. And finally, they had, like, this meeting, and they said, you know, Courtney, we really think you should go to a long-term treatment center. And I said, I think that's a great idea, but I know about these meetings I can go to. I'll try them out. I'll go to detox. I'll try them out, and then we can reconvene. And they're like, no, we're not really suggesting it. We're saying that, like, that's what you're going to do. So pick a place you want to go. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I picked this one that the only reason I really went there is because my ex-boyfriend was in the other one. And I was like, if I see him, either I'm going to kill him or he's going to kill me. And neither one of us are going to get sober. So probably don't want to go there. And so I wound up going to this other place. And I would love to tell you that, you know, I went there straight from there and, like, everything worked out. But what happened was is I wound up going to detox, like, twice in the same month. Getting there, failing the test for them to let me in. I had to turn back around. My grandparents are in the car. My family's in the car. And, you know, because I could not stop drinking. Like, I could understand when people said, like, find a God to believe in and be honest and do those kinds of things. But I did not know what it meant to, like, not drink, you know. Like, that's what I do. Like, I drink. And I just identified with that. And I had no identity besides that. And I really didn't know how to function outside of that. So I go back, and then I go back to detox the second time in that month. And the second time you're in detox in 1 month, they don't give you any medication. So I felt really shorted by that. Luckily, my ex-boyfriend's mom was in there, so she, you know, helped me out with that. But anyway, I have really great friends. You know what I mean? That's what I thought, at least, like, safe and protected. And I wound up going back to this rehab, and I remember I pulled up, like, smoking a cigarette, like, out of the back, and this is a non-smoking facility, and the driver's like, put that cigarette out, and I'm like, what cigarette, like, you know what I mean? And I just was in, like, complete delusion, and then the counselor was like, oh, we need to have a meeting with your family, and she told my family that they needed to have money prepared for my funeral because I wasn't going to get sober or stay sober. I really had no intention of being there besides, like, you know, beating the case and whatever, and at that time, I believed her. You know, I was like, she's probably right. I'm probably not going to stay sober. Like, I have no clue what that even looks like. And honestly, it scares the hell out of me because the way I'm feeling without a drink, I don't really want to do that. I do not want to do that. And So then one day I had got a day pass, so I kept sticking it out, you know. And every morning I was like, I woke up and I was like, oh, I hate my life, I want to die. And I really didn't mean that, because it was just so uncomfortable, like in my own skin. Like I had just been like ripping and running like so long, and then it just felt so empty, and so like lifeless. It just felt like so gross. And so the day came and I had to get some dental work done. It's top priority. And my dad came to pick me up, and I wound up stopping by my house, and I saw my cousin, and she had a bottle in her purse, and I pulled it out, and I, like, looked at it, and I put it back in her purse, and it was the first time ever that I didn't think about, like, how am I going to get that bottle out of her purse, like, when's she going to take me to the store, how am I going to, like, get around this, like, the obsession wasn't there for that moment. And I remember thinking about it on the way back. I was like, wow, like, it was like the first shot of hope, like, wow, I might actually be able to stay sober, like, I might actually have a chance here, because I didn't think I did. And so I go back, and all of a sudden I had like a small change in perception, where I was like, all right, you know, like, I don't want to die, you know. And then I just started, like, kind of just, still didn't really listen well, but, you know, just continuing on. And you know, continued on after that, and went to another program after that, and spent probably like the first year and a half like in treatment in a transitional house. And that's not everybody's experience, you know. Not everybody has to do that. Maybe I could have gotten sober a different way, I don't know. But I know that like that helped me, because I could not like separate myself from it. And when I got into the transitional house, women started picking me up to go to meetings. And I remember the first meeting that I went back to that rehab, and I was like sharing, and I was so excited that I sang them a rap song. It was, oh, of course I forgot his name now. That's funny. Lil Wayne. It was a Lil Wayne song, because I was saying how my life used to feel like that, and then it doesn't anymore. It feels like this different other song that he sings. And, I was really excited, because I didn't think that I could stay sober, you know what I mean? So I was like, I mean, if you think I'm kind of like over the place and talk a lot now, or like talk fast, you should have heard me then. It was like, da, 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 da. They were like, is this girl ever going to shut up? Like, thank you for being sober. Sit down. You know? Oh, it was so funny. But the woman actually called like the head of our program, and she was like, if Courtney ever comes back here and behaves that way again, she will not be accepted to come back. And I was like, I don't know what it was, because I bleeped out all the bad lyrics, you know. I don't know what it was. But I was so fired up for the first time in a long time, and started going through the steps. The yoga teacher who was in the rehab, she met me at the Chinese store on Union Street right by the house, and we started reading through the big book. And, you know, I actually wound up getting another sponsor after that, because I thought she was too spiritual for me. And I was like, I don't think I'll ever be like that. You're just like, you're really spiritual, and I don't know if I can be that way. So she was like, I hope you know that that's probably not true. And I was like, I don't think you should try to like coerce me. I'm saying bye. No, I'm just joking. But then I got another sponsor. She had really nice hair. It was curly. I always wanted curly hair, so I figured she was a good bet. And she started taking me through the steps. And then she was on a work release program, and she wound up drinking again. So I was, like, on the fourth step, going into the fifth step. And at this time, I was in the third stage of the program. I had some money saved. I can't remember if I had gotten a car or was just about to get a car, which to me was, like, a dream. Because the whole time I was thinking, if I could just have a car, like, things would be okay. Because I also suffer from this delusion that, like, if I have the right boyfriend, if I have the right car, if I have the right job, if I have the right money in my bank account, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be able to still this, like, thing inside of me that says more and more and more and more and more. So that is all going on. I'm in that third stage. And I started to think kind of like, you know what, I'm sober, been sober a little while now. Maybe I don't really need the 12 steps, you know. I'm kind of doing all right here. Got a little bit of money in the bank. And so I just started, like, working all the time. And I still went to meetings and stuff. And then I remember I was sitting in a diner. And this girl asked me, she said, where are you at in the steps? And I told her the truth. I said, you know, I'm on the fourth step, but I don't know if I really, you know, need to continue on, because I'm doing all right. You know, these things are going okay. And she was like, okay. And then she was like, I'll take you home. And I was like, all right, it's fine. And she was like, why don't you go in your house and get your fourth step? And I was like, okay, fine, like, I'll do it, you know? And she took me through the rest of the 12 steps. And to this day, like, I'm grateful for her, and I always try to mention that if I can, because, like, anytime we're, like, socializing or anything on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, we don't know where people are, like, in the step process, you know? And so, like, if she wouldn't ask me, I don't know, like, God probably would have provided somebody else. I don't know, like, God's plan or anything, but what I do know is that because of that, like, I was able to have a real experience, you know, with the 12 steps. And so I'm extremely grateful to her and to all the people who in Alcoholics Anonymous continue to pass down the message, because it's so important. I could do all the steps. If I don't do the 12 step, then I'm just as selfish as I was before, you know? That's just how I kind of feel about it. But so she takes me through the 12 steps, and, you know, I get it, the promises come true. You know, I was struggling trying to find a roommate, and just right at the nick of time, I wound up moving in with this girl. Her and I lived together for, like, the next year and a half. You know, I was with her when she had to bury her first son, because he was premature, and was able to walk through, you know, a lot of things with her. And she was with me, you know, a lot of times throughout things in my life. And so we lived together for a little while, and life started to take on a new meaning. I started to take other people through the 12 steps. I started to have an active service role in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I started to contribute, like, in my home group and things like that. I started to contribute in other areas in my life. And I, it's funny, I like, really thought about this job, and I wanted this job, and I, like, stalked their website, and I, you know, got it, and it was at the WSFS, and my fiance at the time, he was like, Courtney, I don't know, I just don't think this job is for you. And I, like, went to the mall, and I bought me a new suit, you know, and I was like, no, this job is for me, like, I'm going to be an executive, please, you just have to let me go, because this is definitely who I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be an executive, I'm going to run this bank. And I got fired on the first day. Like, on the way there, they, like, sent me an email, like, please don't come. And he was like, Courtney, you know, you got the email. Like, please just don't go. And I'm like, no, like, it was a mistake. They didn't mean it, you know. And what had happened was is I forgot to mention the shoplifting charge from when I was 15. And when you are working at a bank, they take that very seriously, which I completely understand. So I had to go back to working as a waitress, and it was the most humbling experience of my life. But I learned a lot going back there, and then I worked there for a little while, and then one day my sponsor called me up, and she was like, hey, they're hiring at my job, why don't you put in an application? And so I did, and then I worked there for 4 years, and I was promoted rather quickly, and I managed a small department there for a little while. And I just say those things because it's not about the exterior things. It's not about, like, what I've received from Alcoholics Anonymous. It's more about what I've lost, you know, because what I've lost is that mental that doesn't shut up, you know, like, it still can happen, you know, it still can happen. And whoever was talking about the 10th step, I had to laugh because, like, who wishes to be, like, consistently rigorous and to be that watcher, you know, and to be like, okay, I'm going to be sit quietly here, and I'm going to pause before I make any decisions, I'm going to consider before I'm selfish to someone. You know, nobody wants to do that, but, you know, once you, like, pay the price, and you consistently pay the price, it's like, I want to be my ideal. You know, I have an ideal. I want to be that person. I want to be the person that God wants me to be, which is kind of cool because I just wanted to be the person who I wanted to be, and I didn't even know who that person was. So it was like I was whoever anybody wanted me to be, and that really wasn't fun. I thought it was fun, but now looking back, it was just prison. So... I'll tell you a few stories about, I'm like, I called off my wedding, moved back in with my parents, and I stayed sober. And then right when I moved back home, though, this is what happened, that was cool. Right when I moved back home, my grandma wound up getting really sick, and my family's from Maryland. So my mom was, like, traveling back and forth all the time. And I told you, like, when I was younger, I just, like, ran. As soon as everything happened with my family, like, I just hit the bricks. Like, I was, like, out. I have to do my own thing. I can't, like, be concerned with your sadness and the things that are going on. I just need to go. So all of a sudden, I was placed in a position to start taking my youngest sister to school and making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, like, for my dad's lunch, you know, and because my mom was, like, traveling back and forth with my grandma, and she was dying, and at the time, it was, like, frustrating, and I had to move back in. I had to share a room with my youngest sister. She was 12 at the time or something like that, and I may have been, like, 26 or 27, I don't know. But I'm laying there one night, and the thought comes to me, like, you know, make amends to her, and I'm thinking, ah, why would I make amends to her? I never did anything. You know, she was young. She was a toddler. She doesn't remember anything like that, and so, but you know how that, it persists, you know, and so I was like, all right, let me just clear this up, see what happens. And so I said, you know, I want to talk to you about something. And I, you know, gave her the whole spiel, you know, that wasn't right for me to do that. Like, is there anything you'd like to say about that? You know, and she was like, yeah, actually there is. And I was like, okay, good. This is good. And she was like, well, when we were younger, you used to make us clean all the time. And one time I thought you were dead. So I, like, pushed you to try to wake you up. She said, and you screamed in my face, and I cried myself to sleep, and it made me really scared. And I was like, wow, you know, and, like, all these years later, like, she was 2 or 3 or 4 when that happened, you know, and, like, all these years later, like, she's been sleeping with that every night, and here I am in her room, and she doesn't even know if she can trust me because of the things that I've done to her, and I didn't even know because I've been in this self-delusion for so long that I can't even register the fact that, you know. And she just started driving recently. She's 17. She's on the cheer, you know, and she's an amazing kid. You know, she is. She's great. And, she's got a lot going on. And my other brother, he's 18. And my granddad is now suffering from Alzheimer's. And but when my grandma died, he actually asked me to be on their bank account, which was, like, crazy because, like, I didn't think he would ever do that. And now that he's suffering from Alzheimer's, I can actually, like, be there for him. Like, it requires a lot of spiritual attention, you know, and a lot of resentment praying, and a lot of, like, divorce from self. But I'm able to be present for him, you know. And when other people are mean to him because he's, like, forgetting or something, I'm able to be help. You know, I'm able to be accepting of them, too. You know, I don't have to hate them. I don't have to, you know, like, figure anything out or, like, it's so free because I thought that I had to control it. Like, when my grandma died, I had this plan. Like, okay, I have to quit my job. I have to move to Maryland. I have to help them out. I have to do all these things. I have to do this, 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 this. And that's just my mind, that thinking of, like, okay, what do I need to do here, you know? Man, I don't have to do that. Like, I can actually just step aside and be like, you know what? I don't know what I can do, but I can trust God, and God will show me what to do, you know. And when I talk about God, I actually, when I got here, the conception that I had of God was very limited, but it was enough, you know, it was enough to get by, and then it just continues to grow and expand as you continue to, like, water it, nurture it, you know. And now, like, I've had so many experiences. This is actually crazy. Last night, I was working at this transitional home that I used to live in, and it's a second job every once in a while, and they, you know, I work for them, and it's really cool because I sit there, and it's so peaceful there, and long story short, I'm walking in the kitchen, and I start talking to this girl, and from the looks of it, her and I have nothing in common, you know, and I just start talking to her, and she just starts talking to me, and the next thing I know, she's crying. You know, and I'm telling her my story, and I'm telling her how, you know, we can actually have goals. We can actually have dreams. Like, they don't have to just be like these figments on a piece of paper that we never accomplished, because that's what I thought, because that's all I ever created, you know, because of the way that I drank, you know. And also not having any control over it either, like drinking against my will. And we just had this open, honest communication, and it was awesome, you know. Because that's not something that I could have conjured up. Like, I wasn't even really going to say anything. I was just going to go in the kitchen, like, throw something away and then go back. But something, you know, something transpired there. And, you know, now my life is, like, things like that happen. And those are actually probably, like, the best things that happen to me. Like, besides, like, you know, my finances, like, whatever, they fluctuate, they go up and down, like, still unmanageable. I'm not good with, like, that at all. Like, I could definitely do better. But those things are so cool. And, I'm, like, in this leadership program with the church. Like, I say things sometimes, and I say things to my coworkers or whatever. They're like, what? And then come to find out, I'm talking to my coworker, and he's talking to me about, like, drugs and all this other stuff. And I'm like, And we wind up having, like, this long conversation about, like, drinking. And I'm, like, sharing my experience with him. And he's like, I don't know if I'm alcoholic. And I'm like, well, like, let's look at it this way, you know. And it's cool because I don't know. Am I the only big book he'll ever see? I really don't know. Maybe I am. You know, maybe I'm there for a reason. Maybe it's not about my boss who I can't stand. You know what I mean? She really is a good person, but it's just that I'm resentful of her. So leave that to the side for now. Anyway, and other things, just like I was able to graduate school and move back out again, move back in with my parents, move back out again. You know, I'm actually like studying to try to get into law school, which is a dream that I didn't even know that I had. There's just so many things that have happened that I can't even explain, that directly go back to the 12 steps. And I know that if I would not have had an experience with the 12 steps, if I was not able or willing to carry this message, you know, and this is like my least favorite thing to do to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for, you know, to be here and everything like that, but it's just, it makes me so nervous. And then actually the last time I was here, it was a while ago. It was out there, and this woman said, she said, were you nervous before? I said, yes. Yeah. She said, well, just wait. The longer you stay sober, the more nervous you get after. And I'm like, I didn't know. And like, I didn't know. And then like, so I'm curious to see like what's going to happen. Was it more now or is it more later? You know, we'll find out with the nervousness scale, but, pretty nervous person. Anyway, I don't know. I would just say like in closing that, I do have a home group also. My home group is, the speakers meeting in Newport at 7:30, and the women's meeting at 7 o'clock. More the women's meeting now because I go there more regularly. But, yeah, I don't know. I really didn't think that I could not drink, that I could live a sober lifestyle, or even for sometimes that I really even wanted to do that. But I'm so grateful for the people in my life who continue, the people in alcohol, not just the people in my life, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who, when I called my sponsor crying because like my fiance had just went out and, I was like losing my apartment and everything was like going to poop. She was like, you know what, Courtney, that's really sad, but why don't you like get into a meeting and share how you're not drinking through that experience, you know? And all like my teachers who have just been able to continue to like put my hand back into the hand of God, you know, I'm just so grateful. So if anybody hasn't had an experience like that or wants to, let me know. I'd love to talk to you. And thanks so much for having me tonight. I really appreciate y'all being here.